6 is when you fruit and vegetables, bug infestation. That's the Torah says you cannot eat worms. Again, we're going to talk about that later in upcoming lectures. Bug infestation, that's number 6. And those are the main 6. These are the main 6. Kosher, the food itself, then shechita, then number 3 is you're purging it from the prohibited fats and blood. Number 4 is it's not a nevela, it's not someone who's going to die in the next 12 months. Number 5, you don't mix it with someone who's prohibited to mix. Number 6 is that if it's an infestation, if it's a type of food which has infestation, you have to be careful of it. And then you have another 3 points. The main ones are number 1, grape products. Anything with grape, we're going to talk about that, you can't have. Then also, utensils which have non-kosher food have been cooked in, you can't eat from. And finally, any food which has been cooked, most food which have been cooked by a non-Jew, are prohibited and cannot be eaten. These are the 9 main things. There are many other points. We're going to throw out some words. Hadash, for example. Terumot u'ma'asrot. There are so many other things which need to be taken into account, which is all part of the Hechsher. But these are the major 9 things which I've discussed. That really gives something to be kasher or not, the 9 things. Once you've ticked all those 9 boxes, or in the main 6 of the first ones I mentioned, then you can say the food is kasher and it's permissible to eat. But, having said all of that, I would say there are 3 main categories of non-kosher food. That's what I want to focus on this evening. Number 1 is the actual animals and birds themselves, the non-kosher ones. Why? Why are these specifically non-kosher? Why? What's wrong with them? What's wrong with rabbit? What's wrong with pork? What's the problem with it? That's number 1. Number 2 is mixing meat and milk together. That's also something central and fundamental. Mixing meat and milk together. What's the reasons for that? And number 3, what is the reason for a terefa, for an animal which hasn't been slaughtered correctly, or an animal which is going to die in the next 12 months? Why is that food which is prohibited? Those are the 3 main categories I want to focus on this evening to try to understand the reasons for them and the rationale of the Torah, if we can do that. But before doing that, we must preface this. And we must say that giving reasons to mitzvot isn't a light matter, but it is an extremely important one. And I want to read out to you from the Rambam. The Rambam in Moreh Nevuchim, in the Guide to the Perplexed. This is in part 3, chapter 31. And he goes a length there to disprove. He says there are those people who think that because the Torah is so lofty, you can't give reasons for it. Because of its wisdom, how can human beings, finite human beings, tap into the infinite divine wisdom? And therefore it's better not to give any reasons, better to understand the whole Torah as unfathomable statutes. Says the Rambam, that's incorrect. That's absolutely wrong. The Rambam says, every single one of the 613 mitzvot, including what we've been taught as Hukim, don't have reasons. No. Every single one of the 613 mitzvot, including what we call Hukim, has a reason. We may not always know the reason, but every single one has a reason. Let me read out to you. He says, the truth is undoubtedly, as we have said, that every one of the 613 mitzvot serves to inculcate some truth, to remove some erroneous opinion, to establish proper relations in society, to diminish evil, to train in good manners, or to warn against bad habits. And all this depends on 3 things: opinions, morals, and social conduct. And he goes on. Every single reason, says the Rambam, every single mitzvah, negative or positive, in the Torah, there is a reason for it, and it's our duty to probe and to understand the reasons for it. Which is why the Rambam dedicates a whole section of his book in Moreh Nevuchim and other places as well, to try to explain the reasons for mitzvot and the understanding and rationale behind them. And so therefore what we're engaging in tonight is something important. Because we all keep kashrut, different levels, but we all keep kashrut. But why? Why, you know, something so central as we began, something so fundamental, what is the reason for it? Why is it that certain foods are prohibited? Why is it that you can't mix meat and milk together? These are things which we have a duty to try to understand and be able to come to a rationale behind them. Following in the Rambam's path was somebody called the Sefer HaChinuch, the Book of Education. This was a book written in the 13th century by somebody from Barcelona. It's anonymous. There is discussion who exactly wrote it. But somebody who viewed the Rambam as his teacher, and he was from Spain. And he wrote this book, actually, he writes in his introduction, he wrote this book as something to occupy his son on Shabbat afternoons in the summer. He tells his son, don't waste your time, you know, playing around on Shabbat afternoon in the summer, long Shabbat afternoons. I'm going to write you this book. You can go through each parasha, each week. You can go through the mitzvot and understand the rationale behind them. And this is what it's called, the Book of Education, because he was writing this book as an education for his son to be able to understand the reasons for the mitzvot. And here, again, he goes through one by one, from beginning, from the first mitzvah in the Torah, having children, all the way through to the end of writing a Sefer Torah. He goes through each one and tries to explain the reasoning and the rationale behind them. And so therefore, this is something important. But having said that, we must always be aware that this is merely, as the Rambam calls them, a ta'am. They are ta'amim. A ta'am means a reason. But the real translation for what ta'am means, a ta'am is actually taste. That's what the word ta'am means. Ta'am in Hebrew means to taste something. Because the reasons we're going to give are ta'amim, which means there are reasons. We want to make the mitzvot palatable, in the literal sense, and the right? We want to make them palatable. And, you know, try to have some understanding of them. We want to give them a ta'am, we want to give them a flavor. But that's all it is. It's a taste, it's a flavor. Right? We cannot imagine that we will be able to understand the depths of each and every mitzvah and the rationale, the complete and comprehensive rationale of every mitzvah. That's something beyond our grasp. What we can do is try to give ta'amim, try to give tastes, try to give a flavor and understanding to the mitzvot, and that's what we're going to try to do. And it should be said that this idea of giving reasons for mitzvot is something relatively new. What I mean by that is, if you go through the Torah, Torah very rarely gives reasons for the mitzvot. You learn the Gemara, you learn Talmud, there isn't philosophical discussions of reasons for mitzvot normally. It's only more legal. No. Ins and outs. But actual philosophical deep discussions are normally given in the Talmud for the reasons for mitzvot. And this really began to become fashionable in medieval times. Rambam, Sadia Gaon, Sefer HaChinuch, and others. Why? Because, especially in places like Spain, where there was intermingling between Jews and non-Jews, and in order to defend and make our religion, as the Christians or the Muslims were mocking it, in order to make it understandable, that's what Rambam did. We'll talk about it when we get to the Karim, the Rambam's formulation of the 13 principles of faith was a response to the Islamists of his time, to their creed. But something we'll discuss another time. But the point is that the reasons for mitzvot is something relatively new in the last 1,000 years or so. But nonetheless, the Torah assumes many things, and the reasons for them self-explanatory or expect you to know them. It was the Rambam and the others after him who articulated them and went through them one by one, and that's what we're going to be doing, please God, this evening. So, let's embark. Let's try to understand the reasons for Kashrut, the reasons for the things that we've mentioned up till now. So, as I said, in the Torah itself, there is absolutely no reason given. We always have to start from the Torah from the beginning. In the Torah itself, the Torah doesn't give any reason for Kashrut. Why you can't mix meat and milk? Why you have to eat kosher food and non-kosher food? Why a camel isn't kosher? We're not given any reasons for it. We're given signs, we're given reasons for it. In the Gemara, in the rabbinic literature, also, we don't find any reasons. I should say that there are two parts of Kashrut which we do have a reason for. What are the two things in the Torah which we're not allowed to eat, which the Torah does give the reason for it?
Blood.
Good. Blood and? Good, excellent. Blood and sciatic nerve. Those are the only two things, the Gita and Asher, the only two things which Torah gives the reason for. The Gita and Asher, the sciatic nerve, we're not allowed to eat, because that's where Yaakov wrestled with the angel late at night, and injured him, and therefore to remember that we don't eat the sciatic nerve, it's totally purged, the whole thing. Blood as well, the Torah says, Ki Adam, just read this a couple of weeks ago, Pashat Ahrimot, Ki Adam Hu Anafesh, blood is the life of a living organism, and eating blood is like eating the organism itself, and therefore not eating blood, both of human beings, and of mammals as well, we're not allowed to have blood. These are the only two things the Torah gives reason for. Everything else in Kashrut, there is no reason for it. You know, in Talmud, in rabbinic literature, also, you don't find a reason for it. And so, we'll begin trying to understand the reasons for Kashrut with the Rambam. So Rambam, as we said, he goes through all the mitzvot and he explains reasons for them. Now, the Rambam, as we know, was a rationalist. and you try to make things as understandable as possible and as rational as possible. But he says something which is very difficult. You know what he says the reasons for all kashrut is? The whole kashrut. What's the reason for kashrut? According to the Rambam? No. It says the Rambam, it's primarily all health purposes. Good health. Keeping kosher, apparently according to the Rambam, gives you a healthy lifestyle. Listen to this. This is in the guide in Moreh, in part 3, chapter 48. Rambam says, I maintain, food which is forbidden by the Torah is unwholesome. There is nothing among the forbidden kinds of food whose injurious character is doubted, except pork and fat. But in these cases, the doubt is not justified, for pork contains more moisture than necessary for human food and too much of superfluous matter. The principal reason why the law forbids swine's flesh is to be found in the circumstance that its habits and its food are very dirty and loathsome. It's already been pointed out how emphatically the Torah enjoins the removal of the sight of loathsome objects, even in fields in the camp, etc. If we were allowed to eat swine's flesh, the streets and the houses would be more dirty than a cesspool, as may be seen at present in the country of the Franks, right, referring to the Christians. Yeah. The fat, and he continues, the fat of the intestines makes us full, interrupts our digestion, produces cold and thick blood, and so on and so forth. And then he goes on, he says, meat boiled in milk is undoubtedly gross food and makes overfull. And he goes through the whole kashrut and he says the whole thing is primarily a health guide. That's what it is. It's to give you advice on how to live a healthy lifestyle. And in his footsteps, the Chinuch, the book of education I mentioned earlier, he follows the same idea. And he explains further, and he says, look, the body is a conduit for the soul. And if you don't look after your body, then you know your soul's not going to have permanence in this world. And so therefore the Torah wants us to look after our body, so that our soul will be able to endure and to live out this world. And he says the same applies to terefa. The reason you can't have an animal which is going to die in the next 12 months is because it's disease. The fact it's going to die in 12 months by you eating, it's unhealthy, it's physically unhealthy, and it's going to make things bad for you. That is the shita, that's the opinion of the Rambam, that kashrut as a whole, the details later, as a whole, kashrut is a guide for healthy eating and living. Which is very, very difficult, extremely difficult, and as his contemporaries, the Ramban and others, didn't like it at all. Very difficult to comprehend this and to accept this. Because how on earth can you say that kashrut is merely a diet, a healthy diet? Yeah. Is it true statistically that do Jews have healthier lifestyles than non-Jews? You know, if you were to take if you were to make the statistics, I don't think it would come out that Jews are healthier and living longer than non-Jews are. Right? And to relegate all the laws of the Torah to just health, it's very difficult. Ramban didn't like that at all. And furthermore, they ask, Yosef Alba asks this, he says, if this is the case, that the Torah is telling you guidelines for health, then why are only Jews commanded in this? Doesn't the Pasuk say, V'rahamava kol ma'asav, God is merciful to all his creatures? So tell the non-Jews this as well. The non-Jews should also keep kashrut. If this idea, the whole idea is God's giving us good health guidelines, then tell the non-Jews as well. Why are only Jews instructed in this? So that's the first approach, that of the Rambam, that in principle the idea of kashrut is a health system. And as we said, there are obviously difficulties with such an approach. And so there are others. So I'm going to do is I'm going to go through the three categories I mentioned earlier: non-kosher animals, meat and milk, and terefa, and give the reasons of the other Rishonim, the other medieval commentators, to each of these categories. So category number one, food itself. You know, why does the Torah prohibit an animal which doesn't have split hooves, or doesn't chew the cud? Right? Why? So Ramban writes he takes issue with the Rambam. The Rambam Nachmanides takes issue with Maimonides. And Rambam says it's got nothing to do with health, because the Torah prefaces these laws with Va'anshei Kodesh Tihinyuni, should be men of holiness. Ramban sees this as spiritual health, not physical health. He says Rambam's right, it's got to do with health, but it's spiritual health, in the sense that when you eat the food which the Torah outlaws and proscribes from eating, what you are doing is you are ingesting predatory food, which is not good for your soul. Spiritually, it's bad for you. If you ingest food which the Torah prohibits, because what it does is it creates within you a cruel nature. Why? Because the animals, says the Rambam, the animals which the Torah prohibits and prescribes from eating are animals which are predatory, right? Not carnivores, and the birds as well. All the birds which the Torah prohibits are birds which are birds of prey, right? And to eat such animals creates within you a cruel nature, and we don't want to infuse ourselves with their DNA, as the saying goes, you are what you eat. And by eating this, it can have effect on you. You may be thinking, how can it have a spiritual effect on me? Can it have a physical effect on me? But the answer is no. Just like people can take tablets, people can take substances which change a person's mood and change a person's psyche, right? So too, there are foods, according to Ramban, which can change a person's spiritual nature and his essence and his makeup and identity. And that's why the Torah prohibits these foods. To the best of my knowledge, these are the only two reasons given for non-kosher food itself. I haven't found anything else. At the end, we'll give a more holistic approach. But specifically, why the Torah permits these animals and prohibits these animals, why split hooves and chewing a cud, the only reasons which we have are Rambam, Maimonides, who's saying it's health, and Ramban, who's saying it's not physical health, it's spiritual health. These are the two main reasons for kosher food. Okay. Then we move on to meat and milk. What's the reasons for meat and milk being prohibited? So, the Chinuch, what we said earlier, he says that he understands this along the lines of Sha'atnez and Kilayim. So, there are mitzvot in the Torah which prohibit you from blending and mixing disparate entities. So, for example, wood and linen. Well, the reason is why they are meant to be kept separate is a discussion for another time. But wood and linen are two forces or two things in the world which must be kept separate, and they're not meant to be mixed together and be worn. Similarly, kilayim are fruits. Fruits are not meant to be grafted together. This is why we don't say shehayanu on any of the citrus fruits, because citrus fruits are grafted, and we don't say shehayanu on them because it's not something which should be happening. And so he sees that meat, a mixture of meat and milk along the same lines. By mixing meat and milk, what you are doing is mixing two disparate forces in the world, which shouldn't be mixed, and that's why the Torah prohibits it. Now, why meat and milk are meant to be kept separate doesn't explain, but that's how we understand this mitzvah. It's a mitzvah that the Torah is telling you, these are two separate things, they must be kept separate, and perhaps along the reasons we're going to see in a moment. Ramban says something differently. Ramban says, when the Torah talks about mixing meat and milk, it doesn't say don't mix meat and milk. What the Torah says is, "Lo tevashel gedi b'chalev imo." Do not mix a kid in its mother's milk. Says the Ramban, it's cruel to cook and to mix a kid in the milk of its mother. What you're doing is taking a child and mixing it in the milk of its mother, two separate entities, mix them together. That's something cruel, and therefore that's why the Torah prohibits it. Now you may be thinking, yes, all types of meat and milk are prohibited to be mixed together. That's true. That's because he says, you know, on a wider level, you can understand as every animal being a mother, and every all the milk of the also being a young in the sense that it was once the young of something else. And therefore, although the Torah itself gives the main reason of not cooking meat and milk together, because it's a kid in its mother's milk, right? And the rationale for the Ramban of Nachmanides is that the idea is it's cruel, and that seemingly would only apply to a kid in its mother's milk, that can be extended to everything and not just to a kid and its mother's milk. That's what Ramban says. It's got to do with cruelty. Rashbam was the grandson of Rashi, similar on the similar lines. He says that it's gluttonous, he says. To eat dead meat together with something which gives nutrition and life, because milk is what gives nutrition to the offspring and gives it life. To mix these two things together, dead meat and live milk, that's a gluttonous act, and that is incorrect to do. That creates within a person this gluttonous propensity. And so, those are the three reasons. We have the Chinuch who says it's mixing disparate forces together. Then you have Nachman Elazar who's saying it's cruel, and the Rashbam who's saying it's gluttonous. Now, Rambam, we said earlier, Rambam lands, it's unwholesome. It's not healthy. But then the Rambam says something interesting, specifically with meat and milk. Rambam says with meat and milk, it's prohibited. Why? Because, he says, I'm not sure about this, but he says, most likely this is the case. He says it was probably an idolatrous practice at the time to mix meat and milk together, and therefore the Torah prohibited you mixing meat and milk. So he says like this, meat boiled in milk is undoubtedly gross food and meat, but I think that most probably it's also prohibited because it's somehow connected with idolatry, forming perhaps part of the service, or being used in some festival of the pagans. This I consider the best reason for this prohibition. But as far as I have seen the books on their rites, nothing is mentioned of this custom. So Rambam studied the idolatrous books, something we'll discuss another time. And he's saying, I didn't find anything which says that basar bechalav, meat and milk, is idolatrous. But that probably, he says, that's probably right. A congregant of mine from Wembley once alerted me to a book called Palestine Pleasantry. This is written by Elizabeth Ann Finn. She lived in the 19th century in the then Palestine. And she writes a diary there. And in this book, she is saying on her birthday party, she asked one of the Arab fellaheen, the Arab peasants, cook her a roasted lamb. And the response of this fellah, of this Arab peasant, was, I'll do it for you, but our right is that we have to do it together with milk, with leaven. It can only be done together. And that's been our tradition for all the time. And then she writes this all. And she says, then she asks, isn't this against the Nabi, maybe Musa, the prophet of Moses? Says, yeah, but we also do other things as well, like cooking them in the same, cooking the young in its mother's milk, and kilayim, many things. This peasant went on to say they did, which was in direct contrast to what the Torah says not to do. And Rambam, in many places, many different mitzvot, Rambam understands mitzvot in the Torah to be targeting and weaning us off idolatrous practice. And Rambam learned so many mitzvot like that. So for example, he learns a man not using a razor on his beard, or the corners of his head, and tattoos. Many examples of mitzvot in the Torah, the Rambam learns it as being mitzvot to wean us off idolatrous practice, because this was the practice of the idolaters in the time the Torah was given. And yes, you can argue this no longer applies. Idolaters and the pagans don't eat meat and milk together. It's not one of their specific rites. But nonetheless, that's the whole idea of the Torah. And this is something we'll discuss in the Rambam's Principles of Faith. The idea of the Torah is Yichud Hashem, is the unity of God, and to shatter all the idols. When we talk about shattering idols, we don't mean idols of, the physical idols, of course, that was one thing. What we mean is the theological idols and the idolatrous idols. That's what we mean. And so many mitzvot in the Torah, according to Rambam, are ideas to take us away from these idolatrous practices. And says the Rambam, meat and milk could be along the same lines, that they are prohibited because they were once idolatrous practice, and therefore the Torah prohibited them from being eaten together. Finally, one more point before we move on to a holistic approach, terefa. Why is an animal which is going to die in the next 12 months, why is that prohibited? So again, according to Rambam, we said it's health purposes, it's disease. Rambam says, because it's been torn. Right? A terefa literally means it's been torn. It's been, let's say, killed by another animal. Since it's been subjected to cruelty, to ingest this food will bore cruelty within yourself, and therefore that's why the Torah prohibits it. If Shimshon Fal Hirsch says something else, German from 18th century, beginning of 19th century, Shimshon Fal Hirsch says that the reason we're not allowed to have a terefa is simply because the Torah calls a terefa basar basadeh. Once it's been torn, it's there to be consumed. To be consumed by the other animals, right? To be eaten by the scavengers. And for us to eat such type of food brings us down to eating food of animals or lowly food. And by not eating a terefa, it reminds us of our higher core that we are different from animals. So to summarize what we've said until now, before I want to give the main approach. To summarize what we've said until now is as follows. What we did is, we introduced by explaining what the word kasher means. We went through the 9 main things that kasher entails. Then we explained that giving reasons for mitzvot is something important, but you must tread with caution. Then we gave the reasons for the 3 main categories. For number 1, non-kosher food itself. The Rambam says, Maimonides says it's physical health. Nachmanides says it's spiritual health. Then basar b'chalav, meat and milk together. One opinion is that it's forces which shouldn't be mixed together. Another opinion we said is that it's cruel. A third is gluttonous. And the fourth is that it's unhealthy. Or, says the Rambam, it's connected with idolatrous practices. And therefore, the Torah prescribed it in order to take us away and wean us off idolatrous practices. And finally, a terefa is prohibited because a terefa is either something which is going to die, it's not healthy, or spiritually it's not healthy, it's been subjected to cruelty, or because it's something for the animals of the field and not something which we should be partaking of. Any questions on this? Is this understandable? Is everyone following? Right, these are the, on the one by one, what we've done is gone through each category and tried to explain the different reasons in the Rishonim for the medieval commentators for the basic ideas of kashrut. What I want to try to do now, in the remaining quarter of an hour, is give a more holistic approach. An approach which combines a bit of what we've said, but it puts together everything, and I'm indebted to this idea, the main idea, the principal idea, to someone called Dennis Prager. I saw this idea in one of his books some time ago. So, the idea is as follows. There are 4 main types of mitzvot in the Torah. 4 different types of purposes of mitzvot. So, number 1, reflexive mitzvot. Number 2, ethical mitzvot. Number 3, national identity mitzvot. And number 4, mitzvot, which are holy mitzvot. Let's go through each of these 4 and try to explain what we mean by this. So reflexive mitzvot are mitzvot which are there to bring a person up, right? A person to work on himself. So for example, prayer is a reflexive mitzvah. What prayer does is the word tefillah means leitpalel, a person to judge himself, it's a person to meditate with himself and to bring himself up. The mitzvah of bikurim, of the first fruit. What was the purpose of bringing the first fruit? Appreciation, gratitude, self-development. That's the idea. It's reflexive mitzvot. There are mitzvot which are there to improve a person's character. That's one type of mitzvot. Also, you could say mitzvot like tzitzit as well. Tzitzit are there to remind us of our duty. There are there mitzvot, reflexive mitzvot, on the things we do on the outside, to make us aware of our duties and our goals and our identity in life. That's number 1. Then you have mitzvot, which are ethical mitzvot. These are self-understandable. things like murder, theft, perjury, but on a lower level as well. Charity, looking after the ill, the poor, the weak, lashon hara, right? Becoming a good ethical person isn't something that just happens overnight. The Torah has to legislate, has to give you a framework of what good means. Hitler thought he was doing something very good, getting the world, you know, ridding the world of vermin, right? If you don't have a definition of what good means, then you can end up having a warped understanding of what good actually means. And so that's the second type of mitzvot. Then there are ethical and moral mitzvot, mitzvot which are there for society and for ethical purposes, such as the examples we've given, charity and murder and prohibition against murder and so on and so forth. That's number two. Number three are laws of holiness. So we've discussed in the past, our makeup is of a body and a soul. That's what we are. We are a body, a physical body, which it's our drives put us down to material, instinctive matter. And then you have spiritual things. You have the soul. The soul pulls you up towards selflessness and to more spiritual ideals. And there is a constant battle between the two. What are the two main things which we engage in on a daily basis, on a regular basis? The two main things we engage in on a regular basis, which we share with the animal kingdom, which all mammals do, right? Number one, eating. Number two, procreation. These are things which we share with the animal kingdom. Our body part of our identity shares the animal kingdom that we eat and we procreate to bring the next generation. And the Torah sanctifies these bodily, material, physical acts. And so eating, we make a bracha before, the Birkat HaMazon at the end, grace after meals, that's the idea, elevate, the Torah tells us, you elevate the food by doing so, washing your hands. These are all things to elevate you whilst engaging in animalistic things such as eating. Add to it a bit of holiness, elevate it, so it doesn't just become something which is just animalistic, pure eating. Similarly, procreation as well. We know there are certain things, certain relationships about it's forbidden to engage in, and also even within a couple within themselves, there are times where they abstain from each other. Adding that holiness to that unit of our lives. And we also elevate not just matter, but also time. We elevate time, Shabbat, Chagim, special times during the year. That's the third type of mitzvah, laws of holiness. The fourth type of mitzvah, national mitzvot. Things to remind us of our national identity. So a great example we just had is matzah. Yeah, matzah is there to remind us of what happened when we left Egypt, what happened as a nation. Maror, to remind us of the bitter herbs, what our ancestors experienced in Egypt. Tisha B'Av, Purim, Chanukah, these are all things which are mitzvot on a national level, which are there to remind us of our national identity. So these are the four main types of mitzvot. Number one, reflexive mitzvot. These are mitzvot which are there to self-development, prayer, appreciation, bikurim, first fruits. Then you have mitzvot which are purely ethical and moral, so murder, lying, stealing. Then you have mitzvot which are there to add holiness into our lives. So all things got to do with eating, all things got to do with relationships. These are all there to add holiness in our lives. And number four, national mitzvot, mitzvot to give us a national identity, things such as matzah and maror, and so on and so forth. Kashrut, you could argue, has all four of these elements. All four. Let's go through them one by one. And I'm talking about the broader perspective of kashrut. So, let's start with the main... Keeping kasher, at the end of the day, you're definitely limited the amount of food from the animal kingdom you can eat. This is something we're going to discuss next week, vegetarianism and veganism, and you know what the Torah's perspective on that is. But definitely, we are more limited in what we can eat when we keep kasher. There are less animals that we can eat. And this is both reflexive and ethical. And I'll explain this with something which we're going to discuss more next week, but very briefly, something which Rabbi Yosef Alba, in the 15th century, he writes that really, we shouldn't eat any meat. And he brings a proof for it, which we'll discuss next week, as I said. Really, we shouldn't be eating meat, we should all be vegetarians. Cook talks about this as well. Again, it's something we'll develop, hopefully, next week. But, in principle, we shouldn't really be eating meat. Because killing animals, killing birds, for our own, killing fish even, for our own advantage, is something which is cruel. But, due to human nature, and to what happened historically, again, we will discuss this, the Torah had to permit. God, as it were, changed his mind. And we will see where this happened, where God changed his mind. But initially, it was only we were only meant to be vegetarians, and we were allowed to actually eat meat and birds and fish. And what he wants to say is that really, the Torah describes eating meat as a craving. The Torah says, "Bechol avat nafshecha tochal basar." It's a craving. It's something which the Torah recognizes human need and says, okay, you can have meat, but it must be done in a certain way. And by keeping the rules of kashrut, what it does is, it limits the amount, firstly, the number of things that, but firstly does, it limits the amount of meat that we can eat. Because less types of animals we can indulge in. Furthermore, then you have the idea of not eating a limb from a living animal. Same idea. You know, you want to eat animals, you want to do that, fine. There's a concession, we're going to allow you to do so, but you must do it with the minimum cruelty. Shahita. It can't be with a blunt knife. It has to be with a sharp knife so there is no cruelty. Ethical and reflexive self-development. And also to ensure the animal, no animal cruelty and the welfare of the animal kingdom. Why specifically a pig is prohibited and a lamb is permissible, that you could say is the same as asking why is it that green tells you to go when you're driving and red tells you to stop. Right? It could be, it's a suggestion, it could be that why specifically pork is forbidden is it's just merely, it just happens to be like that. There's a fascinating midrash which the Or HaChaim, Or HaChaim brings this in Vayikra, chapter 11, verse 14. He brings this midrash. The midrash says, the word for pig in Hebrew is hazir. What's the root of the word hazir? Hazar, to come back. The midrash says, that in the times of Mashiach, pig will become permissible to eat. Okay? It's the midrash. Or HaChaim brings this. Alright? Lachzor, it will come back, it will be permissible. Okay, now we're not yet in the times of Mashiach, just in case. Yeah. So, but what that shows you is something remarkable. What that shows you really, there's nothing intrinsic, according to this at least, there's nothing intrinsically wrong with it. The Torah wanted to limit the amount of animals we eat. It says this you can, this you can't. Why these and why these not? You can explain with the Ramban, we said earlier on, that predatory, you can explain, you know, you can say what you want, but primarily it's there to limit. And it's like the green and the red lights. Some yes, some no. Why this green tells you go and red tells you don't go? Psychologically, perhaps the color red is danger and it's alert. Okay, you can give psychological answers. But, you know, well green, you know, for all of us when we're driving, green means go and red means we don't think about the psychological understanding of it. Green means to go. I mean, these animals you can, these animals you can't. And we have to give a sign. Split twos and choose the card, that's fine. If it's not, it's not fine. But it's not inherently a problem. And the proof is, there will be times it will become permissible. The main thing is, there's a limitation on the amount of animals a person's eating. Similarly, you have to all the blood has to be taken out. Right? You want to sit down to eat a piece of meat? Right? You must be thinking about the blood which has been spilled. Take out any blood. Don't eat that blood which has been spilled for your, you know, you want to eat meat, fine. There's a concession, we're going to allow you to eat meat. We're going to allow you to have chicken, but take out all the blood. Make sure that you are revolted by the fact that you've had to kill this animal or to eat. And often when I'm sitting, you're eating something and you're thinking to yourself, you know, human beings get around together to eat and enjoy each other's company on what? Something they've killed together. You know, it's something remarkable when you think about it. We don't like to think about it whilst we're eating. But if you think about it whilst we're not eating, it's something crazy, if you think about it. You know, we enjoy each other's company, we sit together, We do that over something which we've killed. Right? Piece of meat. Good piece of meat. What's this good piece of meat? It's part of an animal. Again, something we'll discuss next week a bit more detail. But to us it's fine. Human nature, we need to recognize it. Fine, you can have meat. But there must be limitations. Limitations in, firstly, how many animals. Don't take animals, killing animals lightly, there's an amount. Slaughter it correctly so there's no pain. Extract all the blood, there's a revulsion at shedding of the blood. And that develops, number one, our reflexive identity. It's development. Number two, ethically, for the animal welfare. Thirdly, the holiness aspect. We talked about the third time we said holiness. This gives us self-discipline. It gives us the kiddushah, the holiness when we're eating food, that we don't just eat food whenever we want and however we want. We're not just animals and we engage and we tuck ourselves into food in whichever way we want. We do it when there are certain guidance how we do it. When this develops our holiness. And we don't end up just eating like animals do. So there's another midrash. The midrash says, Tanhuma says, the mitzvot were given litzaref haberiyot, which means to refine our base instincts. To refine us. That's the purpose of the mitzvot. And to give us the holiness. To add the holiness into our digestion and into our food when we eat. And finally, on a national level, you could also argue that kashrut gives us that identity, because when you go to another place, you'll need to ask, is there a community here? Is there kosher food? It brings you in touch with other Jewish people and keeps that connection between ourselves as Jews. And you know, we only eat, it's harder for us to eat with non-Jews because of the food we can and we can't eat. Many years ago, when we were irresponsible yeshiva boys, on Shabbat we went to a group of us from yeshiva, we went to Harrogate for Shabbat in New Yorkshire, and we took very little food, whatever the reason was, and by Shabbat afternoon, the long summer, by Shabbat afternoon we ran out of food. So a bunch of four or five boys, young teenagers, all hungry, and you know, so nothing to eat Shabbat afternoon, literally there was no food. And so straight up Shabbat comes out, what are you going to do? We're not going back till the next day, right? So how are we going to eat? What are we going to do? So what do you do when you're stuck with any kosher food? Find the nearest Chabad, right? And so we went down to Chabad in Leeds. We had the Melava Malka there, and we, till early hours of the morning, discussing Torah and having a good time together. You know, the fact that we had to eat certain things brought us together and made us have to connect to the Jewish society, others around us, as opposed to just staying where you are without any Jews and going to a place and connecting with others. And so that's perhaps another level. And so, well, to summarize, what we've done is we've gone through the specific reasons of each and every mitzvah. But what we've also done is try to give a more holistic approach to kashrut in general. What we've done this by saying what kashrut offers is really four things. Number one, self-development. Number two is ethical welfare of the animals and creatures. Thirdly is the idea of holiness, adding self-discipline to our diet. And fourthly, giving us also a national identity with each other as Jews, so we stick together and keep our identity as proud Jews. That, with this we conclude. So what we have really, I hope what we've been able to do is try to shed some light on why we keep kashrut, something which we do, but we don't necessarily know the reasons for it. And what I hope we've been able to do this evening is to try to actually explore these reasons and to be able to come to a deeper understanding why we keep kashrut. And yes, not everything adds up and not everything comes together, but as we said, it's a ta'am, it's a taste, it's a flavor. We've tried our best to make this as flavorable and palatable as possible, and that's what we should be thinking about when next time we sit down to eat and we sit down to have that piece of meat on our plate. We think the entire process it's gone through and what that process should be reminding us about our responsibilities towards each other and towards the world as a whole. Next week, B'zot Hashem, we will discuss, is veganism compatible with a Jewish diet? We'll talk about, following on from what we discussed this evening, about vegetarianism, the pros and cons,
and other related issues. Bezrat Hashem, next week, the 21st, at 7:45. Rabbi Hanina Hashem, Baruch Hu.